Yeah, greetings from your weird cousins down on the south coast, South Kent Community Church. We think of you guys, and it is a real honour to be here. I have to say, it's always an honour to come and minister and share in whatever capacity, and this is no different. So I'm really glad to be here with you guys, and I trust that what I share with you today is hopefully a bit of a reminder, maybe, of some of the things that you've been looking at in your series on spiritual formation. But I also hope to add maybe a nuance or a kind of another element into the mix too. But ultimately, I hope you'll agree with me that the aim of all of this is that we keep nurturing healthy rhythms of being with God that actually allow us to do for God. It goes in that order, to be with God in order that we do for him. I'm just going to make sure I can see. I love this little confidence monitor. This is great. Sorry, band, I'm stealing it from you. Wonderful. I love that picture as well about the sweet shop. That is really good. I suddenly thought to myself, I've come dressed as a brand of chocolate. You got it? It's green and blacks. Yeah, see? I said I was trying to think of something like clever I could use as a way to introduce like that we're the sweets. You know, we're not looking it, but that might have been mixing the metaphors a little bit. Anyway, I'll move on swiftly. I know that I've already spoken to Matt at the back about if I say anything too dodgy or off-piste, he can mute me. Although I believe it's actually Lando Norris who really understands the tech. Where is Lando? Has he left? He's gone. Part-timer. Oh, dear. Oh, well, excellent. I forgot. What is his actual name? I missed it. Adam. Excellent, Adam. Oh, well done, Adam. Well, hopefully things will go to plan, even without Adam at the helm. So my question here for you to start with is, has anyone here been on a speed awareness course? We're not filming this, are we? Show of hands. Wow. Okay, yeah. Actually, that's not too bad. When I asked that at SKCC, I think there were more hands, so that's not too bad. This is me in these two pictures, in case you're wondering. I look pretty good, don't I? It's, yeah. Those are the two cars I drive around Folkestone most days. Yeah, I've been on a speed awareness course, to my shame. I have to say I'm not proud of it. But the first question they asked me when I went on the course was, why were you speeding? Why were you speeding? What reasons do you think people gave in response to that question? You can shout them out if you want. What reason? Betty, yeah. Okay, yeah. Any other? I was late. Yeah, I think that's a classic. Yeah, I was late. Any others? Yes. It's not me that's wrong. It's the government that are wrong. Excellent. Yeah, I see where we're going with that one. Very good. My favourite answer on the course, and this is genuine, on the course that I was on, there was a young lad there, and his reason was, it's not my fault, my car is really powerful. I mean, the lack of awareness of just how immature and silly he sounded was quite impressive. And of course, you know, I kept quiet because I thought, well, I know that there is no reason, is there? No one's going to give a reason where the examiner or whatever goes, absolutely, you can leave. You're justified for your speeding. There is no good reason to have been caught speeding and end up on a speed awareness course. And of course, like limits and restrictions and boundaries are put in place with the aim of protecting us. You may disagree of whether or not they do, but that's the aim. They're meant to help us. They're meant to help those around us. So do you think that life has a speed limit? Has God designed us for a pace to live at? And if so, I'm hearing some yeses, if so, do you think it's possible for us to exceed this limit? To go faster than we're meant to go? And like that driving awareness course, what legitimate reasons do we have to ignore that God-given limit? If breaking man-made limits can risk harm, well, what about when we exceed our God-made limits? And for my own life and what I see in others, I am convinced, as I think it sounds like we're agreeing in this room, that many of us are not only speeding, but we've got that accelerator like pinned to the floor. And maybe like that guy earlier, we're saying, well, it's not me, it's the car, it's too powerful. Life is too busy, and I must keep going at all costs. And for some of us, we enjoy it. We might want to admit we enjoy it. That crazy fast pace of life can be like a drug. We're addicted to it and perhaps not even aware of our excessive speeding. There's no time for God. I'm up and out. You know, I'm just like, yeah, nope, I can't quite hear you, God. You have to speak louder because I'm really going now. Now, hang on, what are you saying? Is that how I'm living my life with God? Is that how you're living yours? We're breaking the limits, and it shouldn't be this way. And you know this. Our very faith in Jesus calls us to a rhythm of life that looks very different and leads us towards maturity. So what do you make of this statement here? The road of spiritual growth and core change, the lazy among us will never travel because it's hard. And I'm going to suggest that it's hard because it requires a lot of unlearning. It takes patience. In fact, it takes a lifetime. But don't despair, because the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu, you remember him? Know him well? Yeah, he said this: the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, one step. So what is that first step? I'm going to suggest that on this journey of 1,000 miles, that first step might just be this. It starts with stopping. It starts with stopping. Any change, believe it or not, starts not with changing, but with something actually called pre-change. The point that we stop long enough to plan out what change might actually look like. So that's exactly what I want us to do for a moment, to take a stop. I'll put some pretty pictures of trees up on the screen. Like that one? You've seen that one before, haven't you? You should be really familiar with that scene now. Does anyone know where it is? Or was it just lifted from practicing the way? I don't know. It's a nice one, though. So if you're up for this, what I'd like you to do is to close your eyes. Don't worry, I'm not going to do anything weird. Just close your eyes and think about this. Is there a rhythm to your life right now that you want to see change in? And what would the new rhythm look like? And don't think about how it could never work, but just imagine what it might be. Is there a spiritual practice that you've heard about over this series you've been doing, and in the moment when you heard it, you said, yes, that's something that I really want to give a go? What would living within your God-given limits of time, your limits of your physical ability, your stage of life, your family situation, and so on, what would it look like to live within those God-given limits? I'll just give you a moment to have a think about that. Okay, hopefully something came to mind. You can open your eyes now if you'd like to, or you can fall asleep. That's also acceptable. Just don't snore. So if you can picture a preferred life, and if you can articulate what that might actually look like, it'll be easier to get there. That's this whole idea of pre-change. And it'll be easier to get there, especially when things get tough or when things don't go to plan. The other key to making a significant change is that you have to get to a place where you truly believe that the benefits of change are greater than the benefits of staying the same. Our preferred future has to become more rewarding than what we're already currently doing. Otherwise, we won't bother. And it takes work to get to this point, identifying the ways in which not changing will leave us in a worse state. Because let's be honest, it is really easy just to carry on doing and being as we are and moan about it and claim that we're powerless to do anything differently. That's certainly my MO. It might be yours too. And that's probably why often for us, it waits until we have to hit rock bottom or the situation is so dire that then we're kind of forced to make a change. We can't encourage you not to wait until that point. If there's changes that you want to make, try and make them before you get to that state. Now, I believe this is Dan's favorite verse in the entire Bible and from the Message as well. You may have heard this before. It's one of my favorites as well. I love this reading of Matthew 11. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Doesn't that sound like the sort of thing you go, oh, I really would love to be living in that way? Sounds incredible. And the crazy thing is, we can't do life without Jesus anyway. And if we think we can, that kind of shows a level of naivety and ignorance, even in itself. I'm a big fan of lots of quotes. You'll find there are loads of quotes throughout my talk this morning. I hope you don't mind. This is one I came across, Rick Warren. We are created for relationship with our Maker. We may choose our career, spouse, hobbies, and many other parts of life, but we don't get to choose our purpose. The only place we get to find meaning for our lives is in Him, the one who created us. He knows what we were created to be like and what we were created for. In John 15, we know this one well. Jesus tells us that apart from Him, we can do nothing, absolutely nothing. If we desire life and freedom and joy and completeness, we are to remain in Him, to abide with Him, to be with Him, hearing from Him, following Him. And all over Scripture, but particularly, I guess, in the Psalms, we get to hear the call to know Him. And here's a few. Be still and wait patiently for Him. Be still and know that I am God. They that wait on the Lord will renew their strength. And maybe you want to consider these verses as well. Psalm 127. If God doesn't build the house, the builders only build shacks. If God doesn't guard the city, the night watchman might as well nap. It's useless to rise early and go to bed late and work your worried fingers to the bone. Don't you know He enjoys giving rest to those He loves? And then, Nancy, you mentioned something earlier to do with sharpening the tools or something, and that made me smile because I've got this verse up next. Using a dull axe requires great strength, so sharpen the blade. And now I may have taken this a little bit out of context, but when I read that, that reminds me of it. It takes infinitely less effort to work from a place of rest and in God's strength than it does to go from a place where you're just giving and giving and giving and you're not stopping. Maybe that's the equivalent of a dull axe. I remember a few years back, I'm not a particular fan of DIY. In fact, that's an understatement. I can't stand DIY. I seem to manage to make a mess of every single thing that I attempt. Putting up a shelf always goes wonky. Even like, you know, IKEA building, I'll get to the end and I'll have 10 screws left over. And it says, they say like it takes half an hour and I'll be 3 hours in getting wound up. Well, I was trying to fit a curtain rail at home and I had this old drill that I thought was a perfectly decent drill. And trying to drill into the brickwork just to fit a raw plug and a screw to go in. And the thing just, like, I'd get through the plaster and then it hit the brick and, like, literally nothing would go. I could put my whole shoulder behind it. Nothing would happen. I got so wound up. And please tell me you're not like me, but in the end what I did, because I got through the plaster about that much, I got the wall plug in and then I just got a knife and cut the bit that wouldn't go in all the way and then attempted to cut the screw down so that like that would, yeah. A bit later on, I managed to buy myself a hammer drill. Anyone here got a hammer drill? All the men, is that? Yeah, I got a hammer drill. Oh my word. That was just like, vroom, in it went. Why have I not bought a hammer drill sooner? Suddenly having the right tool or the sharp tool to do the job made that particular DIY project so, so much easier. So let me suggest that if we want to experience deep change, to grow in Christ, to be utterly transformed for the better, then our primary calling, our first work, is to stop and abide and commune and be with God. This call comes above and before everything else. So can we prise our foot off of that accelerator and slow down? I wonder. Of course, my first response to that idea, and yours may well be as you've been going over this course, is, yeah, I'd love to, but you don't understand my situation. You don't know my job, my life, my commitments, everything else I've got going on. It might be easy for you, Phil, but you don't live my life. Maybe. Maybe. But like we said at the start, the path of spiritual growth is hard. But don't quit before you've started. Consider this statement. This one hurts. The laziest thing we could do might be to keep on going, doing all the stuff and working all the hours. Wow. Think about that. We could be too lazy to slow down. I can be so rushed off of my feet, going 100 miles an hour every day, barely getting time to eat or sleep, super stressed, maybe even thinking that I'm even doing all of this for Jesus. I'm doing all of this for him, so it's got to be the right thing to do. And the truth might actually be I'm being lazy. And just to cap it off, I'm burning myself out at the same time. Okay, would you like some quotes from people with funny names? Yes, you would. So we're going to move on. Here we go. Blaise Pascal, most of our human problems come because we don't know how to sit still in our room for an hour. Bernard of Clairvaux, I'm sure a favorite for all of you. Yeah. Activism, the sin of laziness, the sin of sloth, the busyness that cannot bear the effort demanded by a life of solitude and recollection. Unless and until we rest in God, we will never risk for God. One of the biggest unexpected consequences of being overworked is that you're far more likely to morally compromise yourself. That one hits home. You might recognize him. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do I mentioned about needing to see the benefit of change as better than staying unchanged. So to help us get there, I'd like us to think about the dangers of a life of being busy without him. And I'm going to put a few up on the screen. Looking good, being bad is probably a bit harsh, but it might get the point across. Okay, here we go. Here are some of the looking good. If you're doing a little tick chart, you might want to do that, but don't tell anyone. Praying eloquently, reading our Bible, attending meetings, volunteering with church projects, singing loudly in worship, speaking out bold prophetic words, operating in the supernatural. But this exterior self might look nothing like the interior self that's going on. So can you relate to some of these? Being judgmental, defensive, gossiping, holding grudges, seeking attention and position, craving power, hurting others and ourselves, behaving immaturely. Is it possible to look good and be bad? I would suggest it is. I read this quote the other day on Instagram. I quite like it. I don't care if you speak in tongues, if you're mean in English. That's a pretty good one, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Through the Bible, there is example after example of characters who exhibit great exterior religiosity, but we see a complete void of true spirituality internally. And maybe the best examples in the New Testament are the Pharisees and the religious leaders. Sadly, perhaps the people like us in this room. I don't know if we are the equivalent or could be the equivalent. See, I love to think of myself as more like one of the really good disciples. Do you put yourself, when you read the stories and the interactions, you always go to, yeah, come on, Jesus, sort them lot out. I'm like one of the good disciples. But actually, I think I'm actually more like a Pharisee than I care to admit. I can look good on the surface, but underneath lies the true, far less mature self. Spiritual growth is hard because it calls into question my maturity or my lack of quite often. So let's talk about maturity. I want you to have a think about this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how spiritually mature are you? Don't tell anyone next to you. I can see someone. Yeah, brilliant. Someone's gone straight in with 10. Wonderful. Scale of 1 to 10. How spiritually mature are you? And why? What's your measuring stick for why you would give yourself that number, whatever it is? What are some of the behaviors of spiritually mature people? And then consider this question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how emotionally mature are you? How emotionally mature are you? And maybe consider the same reasons. Why? What's your measuring stick for this? What are some of the behaviors of emotionally mature people? And I ask that because of this statement. I don't know what you think about this. You cannot be spiritually mature and remain emotionally immature. Because is spiritual maturity about how many sermons you've heard? Or how long you've been coming to church? Is it about that external life? Or is it more about the inner unseen life? So maybe rather than being a 5, 10, 15 or 20-year-old Christian, just maybe it's possible to be a 1-year-old Christian 5, 10, 15, 20 times over. Tripping over the same hurdles, making the same mistakes, exhibiting the same damaging behaviors and experiencing the same triggers year after year. It's getting a bit heavy, isn't it? So would you like a silly video to watch for a second? Yeah, okay. Here we go. Silly video coming up.
Welcome to Munich for the 27th City Olympiad, an event held traditionally every 3.7 years, which this year has brought together competitors from over 4 million different countries. And here we are at the start of the first event of the afternoon, the second semi-final of the 100 yards for people with no sense of direction. I'll just give you the competitors. Lane 1, Skolimowski of Poland. Lane 2, Zatopatik of France. Lane 3, Grobovich of the United States. Next to him, Drabble of Trinidad. Next to him, Fernandez of Spain. And in the outside lane, Bormann of Brazil. Well, that was fun, wasn't it?
I love it. 100-yard dash for, was it, people with no sense of direction? Wonderful. Look, did our Christian journey begin and end with crossing the start line and then speeding off in whatever direction we wanted to, however random or wherever life took us? Maybe we thought that the whole maturing process would just kind of happen by itself. Not so much a here I am, Lord, but more like a here I go, Lord, mature me. Come on, Lord, I'm doing this over here now, but you can mature me while I carry on doing that. Is that how we think this Christian journey works? So again, I'd like us to do a little bit of a health check this afternoon. If you're unsure what state your emotional health is in, then I'd like us to look at what emotionally unhealthy spirituality might look like. I would suggest you don't get a pen out and do a tick list for this. I'm pretty sure I scored 10 out of 10 in a rather negative way. But let's have a look. Bear with us. Here we go. Using God to run from God. I'll read out the text, so don't worry if you can't read at the back there. You're busy doing God's work to avoid pain. You ignore emotions of anger, sadness, and fear. I don't do feelings. You die to the wrong things. Joy, music, beauty, love, laughter, nature. You deny the past's impact on the present, your influence of your family of origin. I've come to Jesus, I'm in a new family of Christ, that's it, isn't it? That's all sorted. You live a compartmentalized than secular. You do for God rather than being with God. You spiritualize away conflict, sweep things under the rug, bury tensions. I think as Christians, we are pretty good at that one. We cover over brokenness rather than allowing God to speak through it. We live without limits, doing things God never asked you to do. And again, I think I score highly on this one. Judge the spiritual journey of others. Ouch, maybe. Awareness of ourselves and our relationship with God are closely related. And if you don't believe me, I've got some quotes from some other slightly more learned people than myself. We'll start with St. Augustine. How can you draw close to God when you are far from your own self? John Calvin, our wisdom consists almost entirely of two parts, knowledge of God and of ourselves. Teresa of Avila, almost all problems in the spiritual life stem from a lack of self-knowledge. And finally, spiritual breakthroughs take place below the surface of our lives when we slow down to spend time with God in stillness and scripture. And here is where I want us to land, kind of back at the start with this. If you want to grow, slow down. This is the breathing that allows the life of spiritual growth. It is the skeleton on which everything else hangs, the canvas on which the painting can be painted. Our first work is to be with God, not trying to get something from him or ticking a box to say that we've done our quiet time for the day, but just being with him. And I love that quote that you had from Ali Kay when you were being shared with about solitude. Do you remember it? He said this: solitude is being a call to fall in love. You heard that shared here. I think it was back in January. Solitude is being a call to fall in love. I love that. I was looking on your website for this series just to kind of get an idea of where you've been going and what had been shared. And if you've ever looked on your website, maybe you should. If you haven't, it's not bad. It's better than ours. Ours is pretty poor. But yeah. So under your preaching series for spiritual formation, this is what's written about spiritual formation. We are all becoming like somebody or something. For the Christian, our goal is following Jesus, being his apprentice and becoming like him. This series introduces 10 spiritual formation practices which can help us grow in our relationship with God, our community, and the world around us. This is true, isn't it? It really is true. We are all being influenced and formed by someone or something. Now, I've been reading this fascinating book recently, and it's introduced me to the work of René Girard and his idea of mimetic theory. Sounds thrilling, doesn't it? The book is like that thick, and every page I have to stop and then go and Google what the word actually means I've just read. It's one of those kind of books, but it's fascinating. Yeah, mimetic theory, wonderful stuff. René Girard suggests that all human desire comes from the imitation of others. That makes a lot of sense to me. And if it's true, then to create a life where we're cultivating this deep union, loving union with Jesus, where he is our ultimate role model, the one that we desire, the one that we want to copy and be like, is absolutely essential. It's essential we're spending time with him for our benefit, for the benefit of those around us, and for the glory of God. It's like a win-win-win scenario. The most loving thing that you can do for the people that you love, the people that you're serving, the people that you want to reach out to, is to invest in your relationship with God. That's the most loving thing you can do, to be with God before doing for him. So my challenge to you is to look back over this series that you've been doing again. Take a spiritual formation practice that you've been hearing about and commit to it for a season. I love on one of your preachers at the end, it was like, right, who's going to take this one up? I don't know if you did that every single week. That's pretty impressive. You know, right, sign up now. But commit to it for a season. See the practice not as the goal. The practice isn't the goal. The practice is a tool to get you to Jesus. So why not pick up a different tool? Give it a go. Might just be better than the drill you were using before. It might help for a season and then it might not. That's okay. So stop that and try another one. But don't give up at seeking him first. How am I doing for time? Am I way over? Am I okay? I'm fine. You don't mind it? You've got nothing else better to do this afternoon? Look, what I would like us to do is I just want us to spend 2 minutes in silence or relative silence. Don't worry if there are children making noises. It's absolutely fine, okay? But I'm just going to put a little timer up on the screen, but don't look at the timer. That's just for my benefit, not yours. Just to think about our rhythms, to think about what we are going to do differently, how we are going to get to God, how we are going to be with him. And it might just be to sit here for 2 minutes and say, Lord, I need your help. And we run a course, we've been running a course for a while now that involves teaching us about stillness and silence and slowing down. And I know some of you have been doing the Practicing the Way course, and I'm sure that will have very similar content in it. But generally speaking, we don't like silence. We don't like stopping and being still. And what will happen is, if you're not used to it, you'll stop, you'll shut your eyes, go, I'm going to be quiet, and then you'll have 101 things come into your mind. What I need to buy for the shopping for this week, that I need to get my kids' socks sorted out, ready for school tomorrow, or I don't know, like I've got the car's got MOT coming up, or I'm really stressed about our finances at the moment. Who knows, 101 things, that's most likely what will happen when you stop and be quiet. That's okay. What I'd encourage you to do is just have a simple phrase, a simple word. It might just be Abba. Might be here I am, Lord. Might be Jesus. To something that when you realize your mind is drifting and you're thinking about the shopping, just recenter yourself. Here I am, Lord. Okay? So we're going to spend 2 minutes just in relative silence. And then I'm going to read out a poem for us. It's not one I've written, so don't worry. And that's it. I'll end after that. So let's take a couple of minutes just in silence before the Lord. What makes a fire burn is space between the logs, a breathing space. Too much of a good thing, too many logs packed in too tight, can douse the flames almost as surely as a pail of water would. So building fires requires attention to the spaces in between, as much as to the wood. When we are able to build open spaces in the same way that we have learned to pile on the logs, then we can come to see how it is fuel and the absence of fuel together that make fire possible.